Today I want to complete the analysis of convexity. Okay? Convexity for functions. I gave you the concept of a convex function. I gave you the concept of a strictly convex function, and generally meaning convex on a particular domain D in Rn. Where D is convex. Okay. The reason why I ask D to be convex is that in the definition of convexity, what I'm actually doing is to consider the points in the segment between any x and y in D. And so, if for instance the function is not defined everywhere but just on D, I need the function to be well defined in that point. Okay? And then I showed you a simple example, x cubed in just one variable, which is a convex function on some domains, but not convex on other domains, and not convex on the full space. Okay? So, convexity is indeed related to the choice of the domain. When I don't add any information about the set, I mean the function is convex on the full space. I showed you a few things, mainly the relevance of convexity for function and set in optimization, showing you that in a convex optimization problem, there is no distinction between local and global minima, which is the key issue, okay? And then I showed you a few properties. The one we were talking before the lecture, that a function is convex on a domain D if and only the epigraph of the function on that domain is a convex set. I also showed you that if a function is convex, then the sublevel set over D, which means the set of points where the function takes at most a value of alpha, are all convex sets. But the vice versa is not true. You may have convex sublevel sets, but the function is not convex. And the example was once again. And then I showed you that if you sum convex function, you still get a convex function. If you take the pointwise supremum of convex function, you still get a convex function if the supremum is finite. Strict convexity was just asking for the strict inequality here, adding that the two points shouldn't be equal and that lambda shouldn't be 0 or 1, otherwise these two are equal by definition. So, there's another relevant property which I didn't tell you yesterday, and is the following. Suppose that a function is convex on a set D such that D has non-empty interior. Okay? If you remember the background on topology, our very first lecture, The interior of a set is the set of points where you can center a ball of small enough radius which is contained in the set. Okay? So, if a function is convex on a set D which has a non-empty interior, so this is non-empty, then the function is continuous on the interior of D. Okay, the function, so F convex on D where D has an empty interior implies that F is continuous at any point X which lies in the interior of D. Okay? I'm not going to prove this. Actually, for the first part of the lecture, I'm just giving you some properties and some characterization with no proof. You don't find the proof of this property in my notes, since it's long and technical. Okay? It exploits a number of tricks. But just for your knowledge, when we are dealing with convex functions, we are dealing with functions which are at least continuous. Okay? Suppose that D is the whole space, the whole Rn. The interior of the whole Rn is the whole Rn, so it means that the function is continuous at every point. It may happen that a convex function is not continuous on some boundary points. Okay? I'll try to convince you with a picture. Let's take once again the one variable and the positive half line, non-negative half line, as a set D. So, which is 0 plus infinity. The interior is the open half line. I mean, 0 does not belong to the interior. Take any function, something like this. But here, in 0, do not take this, but take this as value. Okay? This is a convex function. Okay? For instance, this is any parabola. This is a convex function. But this point does not create any trouble, because if you apply the definition considering x here at any other point, this segment is always above the graph. Okay? And clearly, this function is not continuous at x equals 0. Okay? So you have continuity on the interior of the domain, but not necessarily on the boundary points. Okay? Actually, I will generally suppose that the functions are convex everywhere in the whole space, so this situation does not occur. So, we have continuity. What about differentiability? Well, a convex function is not necessarily differentiable. Okay? Once again, let's draw a picture in R. Let's take the absolute value. You can simply check through the definition that the absolute value is a convex function. But we do know that in zero it does not have the real. Okay? That the function that we consider is differentiable. Okay? So, let's suppose we have for the time being differentiable on D, which means it is differentiable at every point of D, where D is a convex set. Okay? So we are asking a bit more, we are asking to be differentiable at every point here. We know that a differentiable function is continuous. Okay? So we are not considering troubles on the boundary. Okay? Troubles on the boundary we do not discover. First, I have a characterization of convexity. F is convex on D, if and only if the following is true for every x and y which belong to D. And the following is that f at y is greater or equal than f at x plus the scalar product of the gradient of f at x times y minus x. So a function is convex if and only if this inequality holds true. And actually, you can prove, with a very similar proof, an analogous characterization for strictly convex functions. What is going to change is here that we don't have an equality, but a strict inequality. So f is strictly convex on D, if and only if, same inequality as before, but with a strict sign. Clearly, take y equal to x, this would be zero, so this would be false. We must consider pairs of points which are not the same. Okay? Because if they are the same, this is f at x, and this right hand side is f at x as well. Okay? What's the actual meaning of this characterization? Pick x, okay? And consider this as a function of y. You're saying that f is above this function. Which kind of function is this? Well, x is fixed, so this is a constant term. This is a constant vector. When you do the scalar product of the gradient with y, you add linear terms. When you make the scalar product with x, since x is fixed, you add once again a fixed term. So it is a constant plus a linear term in y. It's an affine function. Okay? In one dimension, the graph is a line. Okay? And what are you saying in one dimension here is that f is above this line. Okay? So, let me take a differentiable function. Well, let's say a function which has derivatives, as I'm considering just n equal 1, x squared, okay? Fix any x, fix any x, okay? This is the line. Okay. The function is everywhere at any y above the line. Okay. And they touch. They get the same value in y equals x. Okay, this is the tangent to the graph, okay? In n variables, this expression, the pairs of points y, f at x plus the gradient of f at x times y minus x, describe as we discussed during the background lectures on calculus, the tangent hyperplane to the graph at x. Okay? So, convexity means that when you take the graph of the function and you consider at any point the tangent hyperplane, the tangent hyperplane is everywhere below the graph of the function. Okay? Is this clear? Okay, here in that case we can say it belongs to B. Okay? In my example, B is the full space. Okay? Clearly, if the function is convex on some domain but not everywhere, the property holds on the domain. So, thank you for the remark. We will use these properties, okay? But because they give you some interesting information. Function is differentiable, so we had Taylor's formula. Okay? Check back our lectures on multivariate calculus. You have that f at y is equal f at x plus the gradient of f at x times y minus f plus some residual. Okay? Function which has a certain behavior, it goes to zero as fast as the norm of y minus x. Convexity is telling you this residual function is greater or equal to zero. Okay? So we don't know its value, but for convex function, we know it is greater or equal to zero. In the lecture notes, you find the proof of the first statement. The proof of the second statement is, half of the proof of the second statement is almost the same as the proof in this other case, just replacing the inequality, but the other implication is more involved, so is more complex, so I omitted the proof in the notes. Okay?
Well,
this exploits first order information, I mean the gradient of F. Let's now suppose that F is not only differentiable, but is twice continuously differentiable. On D, where as usual, D is a convex set in R. So that we can also exploit second order Taylor's formulas. Okay? What you can prove, and you have the proof in my notes, is the following. F is convex on D if and only if for every point x in D the Hessian matrix of F at x, which means the matrix of the second order derivative, is positive semi-definite. I guess Professor Bevilacqua will tell you what this means. This matrix is positive semi-definite if by definition, whenever you take y in Rn, y times the matrix times x is greater or equal than 0. Okay? You should also know something more. Since the function is twice continuously differentiable, we have seen that the matrix, the Hessian matrix, is symmetric. The matrix is symmetric means that the eigenvalues are real numbers. Okay? And a symmetric matrix is positive semi-definite if and only if the eigenvalues are how? Non negative. They are all greater or equal than zero. Okay? So, one way to check if a function is convex is to compute the Hessian matrix and to check its eigenvalues. Okay? But this must be done at every point. Okay, so this is the first connection between what I'm teaching you and what Professor Bevilacqua is teaching you. Okay? Convexity is very relevant in optimization. A way to check it is to compute eigenvalues of a suitable matrix. Okay, then I still give you the result for convexity, which can be proved exploiting the second order Taylor's formula. Well, I guess we have an analogous result for strict convexity. It's strictly convex on D. Well, if and only, let's say, what should I have here? Okay, I'm switching from inequality to strict inequality. And this is actually saying positive semi-definite, means eigenvalues greater or equal than zero. I guess, my guess is, now I ask them to be all positive. Not zero, so I'm asking the matrix to be positive definite. So, the statement looks like, should look like this way. For each x in D, then the action matrix is positive definite. Okay? I'm not okay with this because this is not true. Just a half of this is true. If the Hessian matrix is positive definite at any point x, then f is strictly convex. Okay? But not vice versa. The vice versa is false. So there is a gap between convexity and strict convexity. Okay? We did not have any gap in this characterization. Here, we have a gap now. Why? Okay, I just give you an example, which shows that this is false. Once again, n equals 1, and take x to the 4th power. Okay? Exercise for you, check that this function is convex. How do you do the exercise? Exploit this characterization we have. Okay? It is a function of just one variable. So, the gradient and the Hessian matrix collapse to the well-known first and second derivative. Okay? So, if I compute the first derivative, I get 4x cubed, and if I compute the second order derivative, I get 12 times e squared, which is always greater or equal than 0. Okay? Which means that, positive semi-definite for a number, it actually means that the number is positive. Okay? It's not negative. Because this is a number and this would be y squared. So, indeed, this is positive semi-definite. So, the function is convex. But, if you compute the second order derivative in zero, you get zero. Okay? So, it is not true that the Hessian matrix, in this case the second order derivative, is positive definite, which would mean, in our case, is positive. Okay? But, please check that the function is not only convex, but it is also strictly convex. Okay? You could, for instance, use this. So, be careful here. If I compute the eigenvalues of the Hessian matrix and they are all positive, then I know that the function is strictly convex. But if the function, there might be strictly convex functions which do not have this property. Last week, I introduced you a class of functions, which are the quadratic functions. So, let's take the generic form I gave you. Quadratic function has this shape, 1/2 x times a square matrix Q with n rows and n columns plus B times X, where B is a vector in Rn, plus a constant value. Okay. These kinds of functions are called quadratic. If you check them in for n equal 1, they are parabolas. Okay? I also told you that without loss of generality, we can suppose that the matrix Q of the coefficients of the second order terms is symmetric. Okay? Do you remember this? I simply said that, okay, I have a coefficient here, and I have a coefficient here. But these are the same stuff, so I can replace these by the sum of the half sum of the two. I can replace these by the half sum of the two. So I can replace them with both of them with equal coefficients, and the sum is exactly the same. So that actually, if this matrix is not symmetric, I can replace it by summing it with its transpose and then divide by 2. Okay? So without loss of generality, we can assume that this matrix is symmetric, which means that its eigenvalues are real numbers. Also, I ask you to check, as an exercise, that the gradient of f at x is qx plus b, and then the Hessian matrix of f is q at any point x. Okay? On the lecture notes, you find the explicit computation. Nice thing. In particular, this one. We can exploit this result here. Okay. In our case, the matrix does not depend on x. It's always the same. So, we know that a quadratic function done this way is convex if and only if Q is positive semi-definite. Okay? So, X is convex if and only if Q is positive semi-definite. The other result here is telling us that it actually is not positive semi-definite, but positive definite. Then S is strictly convex. Notice that I'm not stating the domain because I can do it for all points in R n. Okay. Well, in this particular case, also the vice versa is true. Okay. It is not true in general, but it is true for quadratic functions. Why is this? Because, okay, I tell you what's behind this. What's behind is the following. To prove this part, the only if part, I exploit the second order Taylor formula. Okay? And I take limits. And I have inequalities. When I have inequalities, and I pass to this and I take the limit, greater becomes greater equal. Okay? If something is greater than something else and then I take the limit, in the limit they could be equal. Okay? So here I have greater equal and I don't care. Here I start with a greater and I end up with a greater equal taking limits. So the proof doesn't work. Okay? Because I would like this to be positive. Okay? But taking limits, I get greater equal. So actually, using that technique here, I prove that if it is strictly convex, then this is positive semi-definite. But this is obvious because a strictly convex function is convex. But in the quadratic case, it works. Why? Because if you write Taylor's second order Taylor's formula for a quadratic function, the residual is zero. Okay? So that in the proof you don't take the limit, because the limit is used to cancel the residual. Okay? I'll show you actual proofs when later, next week, I'm going to prove you optimality conditions. Okay? So the point is the following. If you write, for instance, okay, I can write this for you. F plus, okay. At a new point z, well, by Taylor's formula, you can write that this is the gradient, this is f, plus the gradient of f times the difference between these two vectors, which is p times y, plus one half, and then it comes this way. Plus some residual. This is the general form, okay, for any function. Well, plug in the quadratic function. You have here, you have the gradient. Here, you have the action matrix. You will find that this is actually an inequality. Okay, for quadratic functions, second order Taylor's formula is exact without any rest. But if you think of what I told you when we did this stuff, this sounds very reasonable because I told you that second order Taylor's formula provides a quadratic approximation of the original function around the point. Okay? But in this case, the function is already quadratic. So which is the best quadratic approximation of a quadratic function? It is the function itself. Okay? So also philosophically, it turns out reasonable. I get the best quadratic approximation, but the function is quadratic, so the best approximation is the function itself. Okay? And this is what allows you to prove the only if part. Because exploiting this, since you don't have any residual, you have no troubles in taking the limits. Okay? You don't take limits, and so greater in the proof is preserved. Okay? But don't focus on proofs, focus on the problem. Okay? In general, it is not true. Here it is true because when you deal with quadratic function, let's say second order Taylor formula is exact. Okay, I think we can take a short break. After the break, I will show you a third class of convex functions, okay, starting from some examples.